Hello, airport industry folks. Welcome to the AX Insider podcast, and thank you for tuning in. I'm Andy Telejohn, the senior writer at Airport Experience News. For the last several weeks, we've been celebrating 20 years of industry evolution leading up to the 20th annual Airport Experience Conference. We've talked to operators, airport officials, and others, veterans of the industry, who've overseen the evolution and improvement of concessions and the overall customer experience at airports. And today we're visiting with the woman who started this all. Not maybe the entire overhaul of the airport, but of the conference where you've networked and done deals for the last 20 years. She's also the person who invited me into the industry as a young reporter back in the early 2000s. Pauline Armbrust, founder of what is now Airport Experience News and the Airport Experience Conference. Pauline, thank you for taking some time.
Thank you, Andrew, for having me. It's great to connect and be talking to you.
Absolutely. Thank you. I do appreciate, we'll just kick off. I would do appreciate you letting me back in or letting me into the industry here back in 2004 when I was looking for work.
Well, you've done a great job. And here you still are.
Here I am. Yep.
Positive that you've done a great job.
I appreciate that. And but it's definitely, as folks have been saying over the last several weeks, it's a fascinatingly interesting industry where nothing is, no days are the same and no years are the same. And so it is one of those industries where it's just, there's always something new and interesting going on. So it's been fun to be here. So what's keeping you busy these days?
Well, thanks for asking. I'm back in the publishing world. I started a new publication called City Revive, which actually I launched a few years ago, but then I took a break when I went to work with Arius. But City Revive is a similar business model to the original ARN, but the coverage is on cities around the country that are creating business-friendly environments to help their small businesses thrive. So I'll be focusing on cities that are thriving because of the innovative strategies that cities have developed to help their small business community succeed. And then I'm going to spotlight some of those companies that are doing especially well because of these supportive programs.
Sounds great. And it does sound like there may be some similarities to the airport industry. And I'm curious, along those lines, take us back to the beginning, 1995, if memory serves. Airport Retail News preceded Airport Revenue News. It was before I got involved. But as I understand it, this started out as a few pages stapled together in your kitchen. Take us back to the beginning of all of this and how you all got started and thought that this was a good idea to get into.
Well, it was actually an 8-page folded newsletter, and I have to say that because I painstakingly hand-folded them for years, and it was published twice per month until the magazine was created in 2001, and that's when we went to once per month. But I knew it was a good idea when I heard a short soundbite about how much airports in Europe were making off their retail shops, mostly duty-free. In many cases, the revenues were greater than the rates and charges they received from the airlines. So that really intrigued me, and I decided to find out what was happening in the U.S., which was right when the industry was turning around in the mid-90s, with, of course, BAA making a big splash in Pittsburgh, and other airports recognizing the potential of their programs. Airports such as Portland were already innovating with really great local concepts and a strong mix of retail and food. So the timing was right because the industry was erupting at the time, but getting no coverage from any media. So I felt it was a really good time to launch a newsletter that would delve into the issues and cover everything that was going on. And it ended up being the go-to news resource for anyone in the airport concessions business. So segueing into the magazine format was fairly seamless, but we obviously added the advertising component to our revenue base. And of course, the publication became a full-fledged, sophisticated four-color magazine that was actually beautifully designed by Roger Schinkler, who was our creative director for many, many years.
Roger, yes, we're delving into some of the names from the past. Talked a little bit about Ramon during our pre-call as well, and it's definitely bringing back some memories. And I'm sorry for the oversimplification about a couple of pages stapled together. But it You touched on, you morphed into airport revenue news and then into the conference. And so, I kind of get the evolution there, but was there a point in time at which that those transitions, sort of made it feel like the right time to make those moves into a full-fledged magazine and a conference? Because that's a pretty big jump there. What made you take that step?
Yes, it seemed to be time. I mean, the industry was growing so much. I mean, we changed, of course, from retail to revenue because it was more accurately depicted what the newsletter was covering. And at the same time, it opened up the coverage to include more of the revenue streams the airport was actually generating and was of interest to readers on both sides. The food component of every program was really taking off, and the revenue issues surrounding parking garages and car rental facilities were really heating up. So just the issues surrounding all of those different revenue sources were just becoming so prominent. And obviously there were business opportunities on the business side of ARN on gaining advertising dollars to help support our growth. And it just seemed like the right time. And I was interested in just becoming, a full-fledged magazine that was going to be just this really great go-to source for airports and concessionaires. And it ended up going over very well. I mean, everybody was excited when we first launched, because going from that 8-page folded paper newsletter to the magazine was just gave it just that much more credibility, integrity, sure, and cachet. And so it was a great transition.
Sure, makes sense. Pauline Armbrust, the founder of Airport Revenue News, Airport Retail News, now Airport Experience News, and the Airport Experience Conference, joining us today. Likewise, Pauline, you grew this for a number of years, and if my count is correct, did 8 of these conferences before selling to Urban Expositions in 2011. I'm wondering, what made it the right time to take a break and get out and sell and move on from the industry for a bit.
Well, that's always a hard decision for any business owner, that grew it from nothing to something. And but luckily, the conference really was what kind of was the highlight of the people that were for Urban wanting to purchase the company. Luckily, the show grew in numbers of attendees. I mean, I think the first year we had about 350 people, and that grew to almost about 1,000 by the time I left. I mean, it was really fun to create aspects of the conference that are still valuable sessions today, like Schmooze, the exhibit hall, and of course the awards gala. You guys have all done such a great job in creating even more value with sessions like the business pitch showcase, which I think is a wonderful service to all parties involved. And that's going to really help develop and refine those concepts. But we always wanted to make the conference a robust, must attend event where people could be super productive from a knowledge and networking standpoint, but also for it to be a real deal making event. I mean, we always felt that ARN was the industry conduit between concessionaires and airports. And I have to give a big shout out. I want to mention, again, to the staff that I had back then, a few of whom are still with the company, like you, Carol Ward and Barb Marino. I couldn't have brought ARN to the level that I did without the great team I had in place. And I'm glad to see that you and others are still with the company. But, those kinds of assets are really important to Urban at the time, who then sold to Clarion and so on and so on. But, it just became something that was very, a company that was very attracted to Urban. And I think it was a good time to sell because, ARN was doing well. It was an established publication with 17 years behind it, if you include when it was the newsletter. It had a growing subscription base, steady advertisers, and the conference was really, really going strong. So that's what really attracted Urban at the time. Okay. So, and we thought it was a good time for a larger company to come in and take both the magazine and the conference to the next level. I mean, we'd always talked about building a stronger international readership base, which would have fed into more exhibitors at the show. And it showed good prospects for Urban, who was, growing his conference business. And so it was a good time and a good fit for them as well.
Sure. Okay. So you got to take a few years off, and that's, we can all dream of that in the middle of a career, but you know, you made your way back, as many do in the airport industry. They say it's hard to stay away once you're involved. Joined Arias a couple of years ago as Vice President of Marketing and Communications. What was it like coming back after a few years away? How'd that go?
Yeah, it was pretty surreal to attend the show that I started so long ago and to be there as a concessionaire. My first big assignment for Arias was to execute marketing activations at the AXN show. And it was a blast and very insightful to see it from a different perspective. And it was great to be back to see so many people I had missed so much. This industry is so loaded with such creative and intelligent people. And it was really fun to be back and to be a part of it.
And now, once again, you've, as you mentioned, gone and reestablished your entrepreneurial roots. I know you mentioned City Revive. Anything you'll do differently? Anything you'll take from your time ARN as you grow this?
Yeah, I mean, actually, in my experience at Arias was really a wonderful, insightful, learning and growing experience. I mean, I had the honor and privilege to be offered that executive position with Arias. I mean, Carlos Bernal, the CEO, he gave me the opportunity to head up their marketing communications department, as you mentioned. And while I accomplished what I set out to do and what they wanted me to do for them, and I really enjoyed every minute of it. I learned so much, but my entrepreneurial urges, as you mentioned, were, always tugging at me, which led me back to City Revive. But I am most comfortable and excited about growing the publication in the similar way as I did with ARN. But I have to say that, my experience with Arias was just so insightful. And it taught me about that side of the business and how complex, challenging, and competitive the business really is. I saw how the amazing leadership of Carlos Bernal and Richard Schneider, the CDO, how they elevated Arias to a much higher level just in the short period of time that I was there. I mean, it's a great company, and I'm sure the industry is really taking note of all the new contracts that they have recently won. But those experience, all of my professional experiences are really going to funnel into the success of City Revive, and I'm very excited about going forward and evolving that publication.
Absolutely. When you got back into the industry, I'm curious what your reactions were just industry wide. These podcasts have been focused on change and evolution and improvements in the largely based on the customer journey, be it through concessions or some of the other services that are available. What observations did you have about evolutions during the time you were away? Or I guess, I don't know, maybe once you start something like this, you're paying attention to the evolution, even when you're not necessarily running a magazine and a conference. How had the industry changed while you were gone?
Well, I think there's so much more on trend variety in terms of what's being offered to passengers. The business operators have done such a great job and focused so much on that. And, the service is greatly improved. And when it comes to the local concepts being showcased, I think this piece has gotten so much deeper and stronger. And it's a brilliant way for passengers to really experience the best of a community. And it was so nice to see the industry keeping up with technological innovations like cashierless stores, mobile pre-ordering, which is now the norm. And I've even seen the use of robots for delivery. And these kind of innovations are just going to get even more advanced. And with business operators so focused on how better to service the passengers, it's going to be really exciting to see how this all plays out in years to come.
What do you, and this is a follow-up on that, what do you recall from, I guess it would be more than, 25, 28 years ago since the newsletter started, what was it like, as you're talking about European airports, really starting to get on, really good at the game, what was it like here in American airports? And you mentioned Pittsburgh and Portland and some of the forward-thinking airports, but what do you remember about those days and what a typical program might look like as you were getting started?
It was really primitive, I guess you could say. Okay. There were still programs that were just learning. The airports really didn't They were just learning the fact that their concessions could generate significant revenue for them. And of course, that was something that they needed to clearly offset the rates and charges of airlines and their costs. And so they started understanding that when BAA came in a big way to showcase all the kind of really upscale retail, mostly retail. And so everyone started really paying attention and getting on the wagon to see what they could do. And they started really getting creative with the spaces that they had, because no airport was set up to build concessions. So they were taking broom closets and all these out of the way areas. So a lot of the spaces that they ended up with was pretty capital intensive, and they weren't ideal. So it was kind of a makeshift thing in the beginning. And then as the community and airport stakeholders understood what the potential was, then they started spending a lot more capital and getting approved for it to build concessions that made more sense. I mean, take actually Minneapolis is a beautiful, beautiful program that's so set up well for concessions and the passengers. And so those programs did not exist, nothing even close. So it really, really evolved quite drastically from the earlier days of 25 years ago.
Sure.
Which is wonderful, because, you know, that it's a great way to showcase the airport. But you know, there's a lot of things that really didn't change that much, actually, because the airports and the concessionaires are coming at it from a whole different perspective and from a whole different mission. The mission is the same, because they're both trying to please the customer and make sure that the customers is getting what they want and are demanding. And they want to be, service at the highest levels. So I think that's one way in which airports and concessionaires look at what they're providing in the same way. But I think the industry really needs to make greater strides in coming together to create real business partnerships that are geared for the mutual success of both sides. You know, each party needs to be committed to each other's success because they want the same thing. I mean, this part of the discussion really hasn't changed significantly enough, because there are still RFPs out there that are asking for things that are not reasonable, rents that are not reasonable, space that is, overdone, over-concessionaired. So I think airports need to be more attentive to the high and escalating costs of other challenges and other challenges of operating in an airport compared to the street, and then structure those deals accordingly. But at the same time, concessionaires need to be more mindful of the bureaucratic and political pressures placed on airports and work towards solutions that can really alleviate some of that for airports. And quite frankly, stop bidding numbers that are not sustainable, or walk away from deals that are not likely to be profitable. Sure. I don't want to leave on such a negative note, let me say that airport concessions, as we said in the beginning, the business is so dynamic and it's exciting, and it's come a very long way. And it's now a great source of pride for airports and the community, and getting good and sometimes negative press from the general media. But that's when you really know how important you are to the community. And that's a really positive development for the industry. It's really exciting to see. And I love, going through airports and seeing all the new programs and all the smart people being able to push forward on creating these wonderful programs.
Sure, sure. Yeah. And Pauline, you mentioned Minneapolis, and that's at least partially because that's my own home airport. But it's also how we first connected back in the day was before I was with Airport Revenue News. I was with the Minneapolis St. Paul Business Journal.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Anderson and Gordy Wennerstrom were we're working on a big overhaul of the concessions program at MSP, and I even 20 some years later, I love hearing the stories about, Joe and Gordy sort of butting heads over Joe's creativity and Gordy's making sure that there were guidelines that were being met and all of that. And then some of the concepts that Joe and Carol Howe back in the day were coming up with, And I love the stories about things like, and I'm not going to do this justice, but the big moose that MSP had, where the part of the moose was in the inside of the shop and part of the moose was the head of the moose was sticking out into the common area, and how that I was just kind of dumbfounded at the time how that was somehow against the rules, that that operators weren't allowed to have, you know, things that, you know, went past such and such a line, and now some of the things you see 20 years later are just astounding. So that, just a personal observation there. We first met when I was working on a couple stories on that concessions program, and I reached out to Pauline for some industry perspective on how this fit in with the bigger landscape of the industry. So little reflection of my own there.
Well, you asked me all the right questions. That's why I called you back to hire you, because some of the questions reporter asks are not that insightful, and you can kind of tell that they don't really, haven't studied or done their homework, but you did. So, and here you are. How many years later?
Yep. Tip to any young reporters that may be stumbling onto this podcast, always do your research in advance.
Yes.
Interesting point that you made about BAA, and I there's a lot of international investment in concessions here these days. Most of the larger operators have at least some level of international investment in them. BAA kind of, from what I understand about what was going on in Europe and what was going on here at the time, BAA kind of took a chance coming into this market.
They did.
That's
and they were well received and not well received, because they were, you know, really trying to tout what they were doing, and they were aggressively pushing their business model, and it worked really well in a lot of places, and it didn't work well in other places, but it really opened the eyes of airports to see what was possible. It's just that, you know, some airports were not amenable to having a developer there. And that's still a running argument. And it works really well sometimes, because there's so much more than just the business model. It's the acceptance by the local community and the airport, the politics, all of that goes into how well it would do. Sometimes it is necessary because of politics, That was really progressive of them, yes, to come and do a good job. They did a good job at Pittsburgh.
Yeah, absolutely. It's Pittsburgh kind of punched above its weight class, at least size versus productivity there for a number of years. Still does in a lot of ways with some of the innovation that comes out of there. It is kind of amazing how many of these issues that you're talking about are the same things we're writing about today versus 18 years ago when I got here, 25 years ago, whatever it was when the newsletter started. So the more
things, I think that's probably in the nature of the beast, is kind of a landlord tenant kind of thing. It shouldn't be, but and also the airlines really benefit from having a strong concessions program, and they don't really seem to understand or go that deeply into what it means for them to have at their hub airports to have a really strong program, because it offsets what they're being charged. Sure. So it becomes a competitive thing between airports and for the airlines. So yeah, it's a really important piece of the whole orchestration of all the moving parts of the revenue base for airports.
Sure. Yeah. No, if we start getting into things like reauthorization and the PFC charge, I may have to move from my chair to a therapeutic couch. I've written about that not changing so many times over the years. It's hard to find a new way to tackle it. But we got a little bit off script there for a second. I know you did talk about a few ways in which the industry still does need to evolve. Anything else you want to add on that front?
I think that's kind of the more significant piece of what I noticed when I came back, is I was really surprised that those conversations still are prominent and haven't really moved very much in terms of being more of a partnership But yeah, I think it's evolved greatly, and it's very exciting to see, you know, the future and how things are going to play out.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Pauline Armbrust, founder of Airport Revenue News and the Airport Revenue News Conference. Hit on what we talked about talking about. Is there anything you want to hit on that we haven't at this point?
I think you were very thorough in your question line of questioning. So I think you covered a lot of what I'm good for. There's so many people that know so much more about this than I do. So I think I've covered everything that I feel comfortable with talking about.
Sounds good. Well, Pauline, congratulations on your success. Best of luck going forward. It's great catching up with you. And thank you again for picking up the phone when I called 18 years ago and giving me a shot. Appreciate your time today.
Well, thank you very much. You have been of great value to the industry, Andrew. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.